Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's world service.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
The Ulster Football Championship, it's had its knockers over the years. We have to admit that. Mm-hmm. But even its fiercest critics must accept that this is where all the major tactical advances of the game have been made over the last 25 years.
Yeah.
The swarm defence,
gotcha,
employed by Tyrone, that shook Kerry to their core in 2003. The blanket defence, with which Donegal tried to wrap Dublin up in 2011.
You bet.
Now they're once again at the forefront of the latest development of the game, and this one is a little more pleasing on the eye. It doesn't even have the word defence in it. That's how pleasing it is to watch. In fact, quite the opposite. They're now turning defence into attack like nobody's business, with the person who on paper should be the most defensive player on the pitch. I'm talking about the rise of the madcap goalkeeper. Oh. A tactic employed by every county in the province.
Insert Benny Hill music
if
here.
If the weekend's madcap evidence is anything to go by. Welcome to the show. Hey guys.
Hey, how's it going?
I know what you're thinking. Haven't there been madcap goalkeepers before? Our friend Shane Curran being one, Ken?
Of course.
Yes.
He wasn't Ulster, though?
No. Well, I know, but in the sport of Gaelic football. Yeah. You know, it has existed. Listen, in pockets here and there. There have been exceptions.
Can I tell you a little something about goalkeepers?
You don't have to be.
Yeah. Okay. But,
yes, Ken. There have been individuals over the years who have been a little bit eccentric in goals, and they have liked to come out and they have liked to play a bit of ball.
Mm.
But that's just been, there's been no real rhyme or reason to it. This is a tactical revolution, judging by every feckin' Ulster Championship game I've watched in the last while. Oran Lynch, Derry goalkeeper, assisted a goal, set up a point, and scored one himself, Ken. I'm talking about from play here. I'm not talking about walking up and taking frees. This guy's strolling up, stroking it around like he's Kieran McDonald up there. Sunday, that was on Saturday. Sunday, Monaghan achieved a famous victory over Tyrone, thanks in no small part to the playmaking abilities of their goalkeeper, Rory Began, stroking the ball into the full forward line to help set up the first goal. Again, assisting a point. His opposite number, Niall Morgan, needs no second invitation to go madcap. That guy.
Not.
I saw him competing for a ball in the air with the Monaghan player in and around the Monaghan goal at one stage, or certainly he was well into their half. The Armagh keeper last year, didn't he score a goal from playing?
Rafferty's the king of the... Is he even madcap? He's just a really good footballer, Rod.
Yeah.
I suppose, you know, given the jersey he's wearing, that makes him madcap.
This is something that I feel you, Murph, I accuse you of failing to recognise, because we talked about him last year, and anytime this happens, I feel you're a little bit sneery. It's a little bit like goalkeepers. What are they doing all the way up the pitch there? Getting nosebleeds.
Those crazy bastards.
Yeah, but I put it to you that these guys, the Armagh guy's not the only goalkeeper. Began is a lovely footballer. The Derry keeper, Lynch, beautiful passer to ball. And they also seem to have more time to pick their passes as well, because they're coming from deeper. They're unlocking. They're playing between the lines. They're moving the defences around. They're not being marked. This actually is a tactical evolution, and a revolution, in fact. I challenge you to finally accept it.
Well, Owen, I know that the memory doesn't come as quickly to you as it might to me and my Galway brethren, but the last time we saw Oran Lynch playing in the Championship, he was retrieving the ball from his net, put there by Damien Comer while he was floundering 80 yards.
No, it's risky. It's high risk.
That's
what a finish that was by Damien Comer.
It was a very, very good moment.
I love the trajectory of that finish. That was nicely done.
And the celebration as well.
But look at this year. It's not as though the Ulster counties have been cowed. They're coming back stronger. All their goalkeepers are coming back.
I know. It is quite.
Why do you just keep laughing at the word madcap?
Madcap. I know.
Yeah. Don't often hear it these days.
You don't. It sort of seems like a 1950s British comic kind of word.
Even like a shoot annual. It's definitely a shoot annual kind of word. It's not a podcast word. How many podcasters out there? They're saying madcap.
It's not a word you would normally use to describe Stephen Cluxton, but I think he even might buy into this if and when he gets.
He wears a cap.
He does sometimes wear a cap.
Yep.
He did help pioneer the taking of frees, which now just seems quaint. We used to all be surprised when goalkeepers strode forward to take 45.
Now we're just annoyed at the amount of game time it uses up.
There's no downside to. Well, there is the downside.
There is a major downside. If you get turned over, then you look extremely foolish, and it's.
Let's keep an eye out for it in the championship this year. Marauding goalkeepers, madcap goalkeepers, call them what you will. Colin Walsh.
If we should give you a madcap klaxon on for you to sound in your own sitting room every time you use.
Let's action that. We can action that on the podcast. if it comes to it. Colin Walsh, former Monaghan captain, is going to drop into studio. What a comeback that was, the game in general.
It was such a brilliant game of football. It really was. It was so enjoyable to watch because we've seen a lot of football in the league this year where it's been super cagey for about 60 minutes. And then the last time, kind of like a basketball game in a lot of senses in that, you know, you kind of watch you can watch it kind of in a detached way up until the last 5 minutes, and then the basketball game breaks out and it's super exciting. There have certainly been league games played this year where it's just been, you know, even the not bad games have followed a certain pattern where it's been slow, 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 and then the last 10 minutes the shackles come off and a football game breaks out. Whereas yesterday the ending was completely demented. But the football that had been played in the 60 minutes preceding that had actually also been of a really, really high quality.
You couldn't ask for,
like, that is Gaelic football. Like, for all of the pissing and moaning that goes on about the sport, when it's played like that yesterday, when teams actually, like, have a cut off it, it's just a genuinely really good sport to watch.
It's good to see they're leading the way.
We need to remind ourselves
of that. Why is it that all of the big brains... come from Ulster?
This is the point.
It's an interesting question, Kenneth. I would say that there has been a thriving coaching philosophy. A thriving coaching atmosphere in Ulster football for longer than there has been in any of the other provinces. And this goes all the way back to Lennon, the Down midfielder in the 1960s. Coming up with coaching manuals for whatever, and in the universities for sure over the course of the last 30 years there's always kind of been that, like, they've always been super serious about their football. But that, you know, that doesn't just manifest itself in sort of like in a gloomy way, even though a lot of the football has at times been quite gloomy, that there has actually been an understanding of the coach, of a person actually having a vocation for coaching in Ulster, I think, than there has been for longer than there has been in the other provinces. And just to kind of maybe use an analogy, like say Brian Cody, you know, is an absolutely brilliant manager, like an exceptional manager, an exceptional leader of a dressing room. But I mean, he didn't have like a coaching philosophy. He had Kilkenny must win. And they must always win, and that was the driving force behind him. To me, I look at Brian Cody. I don't say coaching or managing was like a vocation for him. He was like, I know what it takes to get Kilkenny, you know, to get a dressing room full of Kilkenny men fired up to win hurling games, and he was unbelievably, sensationally successful at that, unprecedentedly successful at that. Whereas. And it's kind of a... Sorry, I'm rambling here now.
No, but, I think it's quite coherent. I'm actually intrigued.
But I also think that there's kind of the idea that, you know, coaches and managers get paid means that the idea of being, you know, under the table in the GA. Mm-hmm. I think that has often led to nearly like a sneering attitude towards people who just want to coach.
So they're in it for the money.
Yeah, that there's an idea that, oh, this guy, oh, sure, he's been managing... you know, in six or seven different counties. The only possible reason for someone to want to do that and manage someone other than his own club or his own county is, oh, because he's making a few quid. Whereas
puts himself in charge of the raffle at every county he manages as well.
But I mean, I think there's, everyone just presumes that's the reason, as opposed to someone saying, I actually think I'm a really good coach. I have ideas about the game that I'd like to road test. And if I limit myself to only managing my own club or my own county, then I'm, you know, I only get one shot at
just think how good the coaching level might get if they acknowledge these payments happen and legitimize them and actually make them over the table.
Oh, no, we can't have that. You can't have legitimate payments.
We can't be having, we have to step out legitimate payments.
Well, you know, the GAA, as we know, Ken, the players don't get paid. It's an amateur game. These lads have day jobs. They've got to make ends meet. And it's important to pick the right moment to capitalize on their fame to enhance their chances of doing that day job to the best of their abilities. I'm talking, Murph, about Conor McManus, who's made a 60th consecutive championship start, player of the match performance with 9 points.
Exceptional. I love Conor McManus. I mean, just every time he touched the ball yesterday, I was just rooting for him so hard. He's just so brilliant. But I hope you read the exclusive interview with the man in the Irish Times this morning, did you?
Nothing. Well, I did, only because he sent it on.
You know, you see interviews flagged in tweets with stuff like, this is Conor McManus, like you've never heard him before. He reveals a part of himself in this interview that a lot of people would have no understanding whatsoever on. Jessica Doyle writes, with its county town an hour from Belfast and 90 minutes from Dublin, Monaghan is an attractive place to settle for those looking for convenient access to both cities. The county also offers good value and is fast becoming regarded as part of the wider commuter belt for Dublin and Belfast. According to Conor McManus, director of Sherry Fitzgerald, Conor McManus, which is based in Monaghan Town. It's been a busy year so far for Monaghan's residential market, he says, with most offerings moving well. As is the case across the country, however, low stock is an issue likely spurred on by rising building costs, McManus says.
Did anyone see my 9 points yesterday?
Deterring new developments. There's a mix of buyers in the market, according to McManus, including first-time buyers and downsizers looking for bungalows in towns, although they are a rarity. The idea, Owen, that an unsuspecting member of the Irish Times property section could ring up one of the greatest Gaelic footballers of all time the week of the Ulster Championship and have that conversation, blithely unaware they were on the phone to greatness. I love it so much. And I mean, the idea that he's capitalising on what he did yesterday, I mean, this was definitely in the bag since last week. And it's just, I love it.
No,
I love that man.
Well deserved.
You know, I love his, I love his shrewd moves in the property market. I love his free taking ability. I just love the whole.
Also, there's a little,
the whole gamut.
Little fixer upper there. I think looks Killy Gowan there in Monaghan. There, a little old 3-bed former farmhouse.
If anyone has any queries, if you're thinking of buying in Monaghan, there's just one man to call, and that is director of Sherry Fitzgerald, Conor McManus. Conor McManus.
What a great hit. Sherry Fitzgerald, Conor
McManus. If I was naming that company, I would have gone with Conor McManus, Sherry Fitzgerald, Conor McManus.
Yeah.
But I mean, I suppose you just got to get that name recognition out there.
The Hurling Championship starts next weekend, as you know, Ken. And we're going to have Jamie Wall and Maddie Clerken on for that on the World Service during the week. Jamie's going to be in, the boys are both going to be in studio, Ken. I think it could be Jamie's first visit here, so
it is.
Be on your best behaviour. Also, Champions League, I don't even know what that means. Anyway, also, we'll have plenty of Champions League coverage during the week. We'll talk about the Leeds-Liverpool game that's on tonight, and we're going to be chatting with this.
It starts from the beginning. Nobody told me to win Wimbledon 17. I just did it.
Wimbledon champion Boris Becker.
My game was power.
Mental strength. That's how I would describe Boris.
He was like Michael Jordan in Germany.
Expectations in tennis world, becoming a superstar in sports, you're now a wanted man.
To pick a black woman as his wife was a big deal. In the German press, it was a black and white thing.
When you step away from the game, you come into a completely different life.
It's sort of walking into a dark room.
She came in, she had a big coat on, and she took the coat off. She was heavily pregnant, which you can't believe it.
The wake-up call came very late.
Boris Becker is facing 2.5 years in jail for hiding assets during bankruptcy.
I've hit my bottom. That's not the end yet. There's going to be another chapter.
Boom, boom. The World versus Boris Becker, made by renowned filmmaker Alex Gibney, is out on Apple TV. It's a two-parter. I'm in the middle of the first part. It's really good. Very good so far. It's quite a compelling subject for a two-part documentary, is Boris Becker. Caitlin Thompson has been watching it for us. We're going to chat to her tomorrow. It's Apple TV, as I mentioned, if you fancy watching that in advance of this.
Fixing to be a good week on the second
Can I just
World
say,
Murph,
though, that's Boris Becker, if you're looking for it. Not to be confused with Becker, the TV series starring Ted Danson.
Of course.
And mostly for you, actually, that's the warning, just in case you go, yeah, no, I'll watch that, so I'll be ready for the chat tomorrow, and you're just knee deep in six series of Becker.
There's six seasons of 24 episodes on this really terrible sitcom. Okay, I mean, if that's what you want me to do.
Yeah. To hear that conversation, sign up on secondcaptains.com for €5 a month plus VAT.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Modern day coaching. What is it all about? Paralysis by analysis. Infiltrated by a load of spoofers and bluffers. Fellas with earpieces stuck in their ears. Psychologists, Clive Woodward, statisticians, dietitians. And as Mick O'Connell alluded to, God save us.
I should say for the record at the very start of this chat that Colin Walsh agreed last Friday to come into studio today, regardless of the results. So we're not just piggybacking and glory hunting here. Colin, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. Yeah, I was looking forward to
getting
there.
We had a feeling, didn't we?
We did, yeah, yeah. Both of us went confident in the game. Yeah. So glad to make the plans.
It was born out. Murphy, I see you've done a bit of tactical or analytical research here. There's a lot of paper
shuffling. I've had a look at some of the important metrics, some of the key performance indicators, and I've come to the following conclusion about the Monaghan senior football team: that they are the thickest, most ignorant, most stubborn char of bastards that have ever worn shoe leather. In your experience, Colin, would you agree with that summation of the Monaghan senior football team?
Yeah, no, that's definitely a fair assessment of them, I'd say. Yeah, yeah. Took them a wee while to get going yesterday, but definitely that's what the stud to.
It was such a great game, though, wasn't it? It was. I don't know, was it partly... It's a hard one to judge because people are saying, well, you know, the shackles are off a little bit in the provinces now because you're going to, as we see, Tyrone are into the round robin anyway. But at the same time, it still looked like it meant loads to Monaghan to win the game. So I'm not sure if I buy into the argument that it was that exciting because it didn't matter as much. I don't know how you feel about it.
Yeah, I probably didn't get that feeling that it didn't matter as much. I think it was more, both teams probably set up to really attack the game, I thought. They really pushed each other's kickouts and pressed each other hard and forced long kickouts. And that just made the game be a bit more open. You know, you see during the league, teams sitting off conceding kickouts and it's a slow pace up and down. Conditions yesterday were good. It was a warm day and the ball is moving quick. And look, you've seen both keepers were happy to go long when they had the offer. And, you know, it led to a real end-to-end game, I thought.
Well, both keepers, sorry, while I'm still on my hobby horse here, both keepers are also happy to go forward with the ball, which is happening all over Ulster especially, but nationally as well. This is, it's gone from what I thought at first was sort of like a fad or something to an actual tactical approach from teams here.
Yeah, I suppose they're both set up. Both teams probably know each other pretty well and where the both keepers like to place maybe the long kickouts and try to take that out of it. But probably Niall Morgan, I felt yesterday, when Tyrone really on top in the first half, he probably pushed the limits a bit and was coming out on kickouts and they lost a couple and probably just created a wee bit of tension in the back line at that stage. Whether he needed to or not, they probably felt that they were on top, they wanted to keep kicking on. But
so you think so it is risky because it looks like it works as well. Like we've seen like Began was brilliant, he set up a couple, was involved in a couple of the scores. We saw it with the Derry goalkeeper as well, who kicked one himself. Like they actually are contributing in attack.
Yeah, definitely. That's it. Look, to create an overlap, if teams like yesterday, both teams kind of went man-to-man out the field as much as they could, and once the keeper comes involved, next thing, that's that extra player, and you've seen both delivered good passes in, both went up and competed for kickouts whenever they did go out in the air. You know, both keepers landed a kickout right on top of each other, so they're nearly, you're going to test them. If they come out that far, you want to test them then and get them stuck in the mix of it.
Yeah, and I mean, there is also the obvious question, which if you're playing cornerback and you see Rory Began 40 yards further up the field than you are. Like, what are you actually thinking in that moment? Are you thinking, well, that's good, he's, you know, he's providing us with an overlap up there? Or are you like, Jesus Christ, my life would be a lot simpler now if he was behind me where he should be?
Yeah, in fairness to Rory and look, Niall's the same. They're both very mobile and they're confident on the ball. And, you know, sometimes whenever you'll have a defender who's maybe out on his feet or needs a breather for a second, he has the legs, he just gets up and go. And I know from training with him, he is one of the best runners in the team as well. It's one of the most humbling things, maybe, when you come back pre-season, Rory Beggins beating you in runs. But no, that kind of happens. But you're a full faith in him getting out. It's just about not creating the turnover then. It's just, you know, if he makes that difference going forward.
And, you know, I think maybe it's one of those things where, like, the fan panics more than the keeper's teammates in those scenarios.
Yeah, definitely. Like, if you're playing an in-house game or something, like, the keepers are in the middle of it, they're coming out the field and they're told to come out. So both, you know, when you're doing it and training that often, you're not kind of phased by it as a team then when you see him coming up. But I suppose in the last play, he went on a bit of a rampage then to try and create an overlap.
Yeah, absolutely. I was interested in watching some of the post-match stuff with the Monaghan players, who, it was quite obvious at halftime watching, but they felt it even being involved, that this is happening again. We're not imposing ourselves. We're letting Tyrone do whatever they want to do. And I don't know what happened at halftime that they were able to arrest that slide this time.
Yeah, I suppose it felt very similar to the Ulster final a few years ago. Like, we've probably competed with Tyrone a lot. Both teams do know each other very well and have good matchups for each other. But just like, they kind of stood off that first half, and I don't know if what they were trying to do at the back, but it just seemed to invite Tyrone on. Obviously, with the wind on their backs, they were coming at them with, you know, really hard runners, and it was very hard to stop. And looked at a couple of players inside, Darren McCurry and Darragh Canavan were really sharp at the start of the game. And, you know, Monaghan just found themselves, to be honest, I'd say they were delighted to go in five down. You know, they could
really
have been,
yeah,
they could have been. I'd say Tyrone probably left a lot of easy chances, you know, behind, and then Monaghan were living off scraps and frees and stuff to get in at that.
So what happened then? What was different about the second half?
I think Tyrone probably obviously had to come in that bit, you know, with the breeze. They had to probably attack them a bit deeper into their D, and Monaghan just, I suppose, they got that bit of, what do you call it, just defensive intensity. But it was players doubling up, or players actually getting contact on, and next thing, the minute someone got turned or got stopped, someone else got on top of them as well and created a turnover. Whereas in the first half, anything that was happening, the ball was just getting spat out, and maybe a shot was getting taken, or the ball was dead. But between that, and then I guess they started to get on top, maybe on Tyrone's kickouts. Maybe, you know, Brian Kennedy had a massive game for them. I thought middle of the field, he was winning kickouts on the run, or he was feeling them in the air, but they seemed to just get the grips a wee bit on Tyrone's kickout as well.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of a part of defensive team setups that we don't really talk that the doubling up, like, it's one thing to stop a guy, and it's one thing then to get a guy in on top of him, but it's actually ensuring that the ball doesn't emerge from those, that you having done the hard work, that you actually get the turnover, you actually get the free out for overcarrying or whatever. And like, that's kind of a mindset thing, really, isn't it? It's like, if you're kind of half thinking, you know, of your own man, you're not really going to pile into a situation like that. Whereas I think that, you know, as you say, that was a big thing that Monaghan did in the second half that they weren't doing beforehand.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, you can get into that trap of maybe you're tracking your man with the ball and you know he's going to ship it off, and that you think that's your job done. But sometimes the best thing is, you know, straight away to identify that and just try and get contact on to the next player, and maybe get an overlap or get a turnover, maybe a 2-on-1. But in the first half, it just seemed to be very passive, and everyone was just kind of looking after their own man, or just trying to look over their shoulders, see what's happening behind. But the threat was coming straight down the throat, really.
I've seen a lot of people talk about this Ryan O'Toole goal at the end, and for some reason it's almost as though they're a bit freaked out by it. It's like, oh no, everyone else is going to try and score a goal from that position now as well. You know, what were the actual odds of scoring? It's a bit of a low percentage. This is exactly what I want. I'm so sick of seeing people just run in and hand pass the ball over the bar. This is a young lad taking it by the scruff of the neck and burying it in underneath the goalkeeper. It's amazing.
Yeah, I was in the terrace when it happened. I couldn't believe that he went for it. You know, actually, you know, when you watch it back and maybe you see the still image where he was, you know, he hit it very early. You know,
he went so early. Yeah. So he didn't even, that's the thing, he didn't even take it on a few more strides. Like, he could have maybe taken a hop or a solo. He took a couple of strides and then bang, really early.
Yeah, he obviously had made up his mind. Look, he had done the same a fortnight ago with Mayo. He got in that back door on the right-hand side and he scored a goal that day too. He made up his mind early there. Probably if he had a tuck a touch, he probably would have squared it to the back post.
Yeah.
You know, if he had his, I don't even know if he's seen him. But he did. He put the head down and probably caught Niall Morgan's praise, and, you know, thankfully for it.
But I'm sure it caught you guys surprise on the terrace as well. I mean, like the idea, like, I actually accept the point when it comes to fisted points that it should be like the last resort, as opposed to, oh, I get in 1-on-1 with the keeper, but I'll just fist it over anyway. Like, that is really annoying. But like, you give people
you know, the exception is when you're a point down against Tyrone in the Ulster Championship and you're 22 years old or whatever. You take the point because it's like, it is the smart thing to do. The smart thing to do is to take the point because it's a 95%.
It's also the boring thing to do.
Of course, it's the boring thing.
You want to see, you want to see people going for goals. Maybe people will do more of it after seeing what the result
was. Well, look, here, it finished the game off as a contest. You know, we'd seen the last Monaghan had went two up, maybe going into injury time, and Tyrone had pegged them back and then went one in front. So, look, maybe a point there. The referee did let them play on another play. If they had a, if
Tyrone
had
kicked the winner.
They could have kicked the winner, and then you would have said, why didn't he go for the goal? So, look, it comes that time in the game where you might have to just take the brave choice and make the risk, and you know, look, it paid off in the end.
What was that, sir? Like, you've mentioned a couple of times you were there. Like, cause did it feel like getting this thing off our back, beating Tyrone in a game like this?
Nah, see, yeah, that thing of getting Tyrone. Look, I think we've beat Tyrone a lot in the league and a lot in Championship. Look, we've obviously come out the wrong side in a few games in Croke Park against them.
That's probably the bigger thing. It feels like when it's gone to Croke Park and gone outside Ulster, that's the moment that hasn't worked.
That's why I probably was relatively confident going into the game. The last time Monaghan played Tyrone in Ulster, in Oma, that we'd beat them, you know. Finney Corey scored a goal that day, you know. He wouldn't have been fazed at all going up to Oma in the game. But how did it feel at the game? I suppose, look, kind of again, half time Ken was kind of apprehensive. I was like, look, this is a 5 point, you know. You could tell the breeze, you know, had a difference in it, but I definitely knew they had to come out strong in the second half. But you could actually get the sense among the supporters around me anyway that Tyrone seemed to come out in second gear in the second half, as if to say they thought they might be just able to chip this away. But before they knew it, they were in a proper Championship game and they just didn't really seem to be able to react at that stage. You know, Monaghan were up in the ascendancy and were definitely running through the middle third. They were kind of dominating that kind of spell in the game.
You only retired earlier this year, so was it what was the feeling like? Did you feel natural going back as a fan?
Yeah, no, I suppose I retired at Christmas, and you know, I had been hoping to go back this year, and just luckily it just didn't really work out that way for myself. Just wasn't fit to my body just wasn't fit to the demands of the game. But going back, it was probably only Saturday evening I actually really started to feel like, you know, I'd love to be in the mix again. You know, looking forward to the game on Sunday. But
the night before,
the game, I was just kind of settling down. We had a first club game, and I was just settling down, thinking, you know, the boys are getting ready for the game tomorrow. And but going to it, no, really enjoyed it. Tried to keep my emotions in check, you know, as much as I could, but definitely
failed miserably
last 10-15 minutes. Definitely was in the thick of it, but surrounded by Tyrone people, but no, I loved it. Loved every bit of it at the end.
You said it didn't work out for you, but you were hopeful of playing this year, so what went wrong?
I probably picked up a few niggly injuries over the last couple of years and had done that spell of maybe being a kind of squad player, maybe experienced player hanging about, and just at Christmas I'd done a decent chunk of pre-season and stuff, and I just picked up another injury, and I just kind of it's just probably just not right to stay about. I just don't think I could have done it mentally, really, just putting up with the kind of setbacks and stuff. Again, I'd kind of put in a few years of that, so I said, you know, best to kind of step aside now.
Was it a wrench all the same though? You're talking about this like almost like it was a run of the mill decision, but you're bringing to an end like a very good career with Monaghan.
Yeah, no, it was a massive decision, one that I didn't really speak to too many on. I just kind of sat down with, you know, I spoke to Vinny maybe just before Christmas, and he told me to take a break for a fortnight and see where my head was at, and I just kind of mulled it over myself, and just went back to him just around New Year's and just said, look, I think it's right, I think I'm just going to make the right call here. Just that was it.
Yeah, and you know, you look at what the service that Monaghan players, like you did your 12, 13 years probably, was it?
13 years,
13,
yeah.
And you look at guys like McManus, you know, Wiley, the Hughes brothers, you know, like they just keep going and going and going, and it's like, it's, so I mean, at 30, it's not a strange time to be retiring in any other county, but when you see these guys do it, I mean, you obviously have first hand experience of just how difficult it is to play past 32 or 33, and these guys are doing it at 36. Like, that's it.
Like, I had played with them boys the whole way through, and that was the toughest thing about walking away, is that, you know, them boys are still, you know, giving it, and you want to give it all with them as well. But look, they're just, you know, some of them, like Ciarán O'Connell yesterday was just, you know, he was unbelievable for playing, you know, at 35, and he was playing in the middle third. Like, he just kept running down Tyrone's throats. I think he had a hand in all three of the last scores for Monaghan, you know. They just couldn't handle him as the game wore on, but like, to do that there in those conditions, you know, it's incredible, really.
Conor McManus as well, was it 60 games in a row he's played in the championship now for Monaghan, and still doing it, you know, not like unerring accuracy.
Yeah, big time. And look, they've really benefited the last two games of just getting them back on the field. And, you know, it's helped them maybe free up a couple other players in the forward line. You know, especially in the first half yesterday when things probably weren't going well, he still tagged on every free he got his hands on. You know, he was big presence in there, kicked a couple from play, and then, look, that massive free at the end, it was right behind it. You know, he waved Rory back. It was probably in Rory's range, you know, and he said, look, I'm taking that on. And it was a massive kick. It was great to see it go over from him.
Yeah, like what's he like? I mean, because we've spoken to him a couple of times, unassuming, all the rest, but I kind of get the idea that having played that long in the Ulster Championship as your team's, you know, marquee forward, like, there has to be more to it than, you know, the unassuming, you know, the kind of the gently spoken, softly spoken kind of hero, you know, because, like, the pressure he's been under for 16 of the 17 years he's been playing for Monaghan, it's ridiculous that he's just kept doing it.
Yeah, definitely. Like, especially, I suppose when he came on the scene, I suppose Tommy Freeman would have been the main forward of Monaghan, but look, he came straight in and you know, they were a real good duo up front at the time whenever he first came in. But since that, you know, Connor has led the line all the way through for us. You know, he's always come up in the big moments, and, you know, he's tough as nails as well. You know, he just kicks his points, and here, as you can see, he's almost impossible to mark, you know, because he has such a great kick in him. Anywhere inside his range, you know, he can just step back, get a yard, and, you know, you're fairly sure that it's going to go over.
Looking further down the road here, I don't think we want to be writing Tyrone off either, Murphy. I know you're not, even though you've had a couple of pops to them in recent seasons.
Like, I've been down on Tyrone for the last 2 years, but funny enough, I am more confident that they could win the All-Ireland after the game than really? I was before the game. Because, I mean, well, I thought the first 35 minutes was really good from Tyrone. Actually better than I thought they had in them from what I had seen this year and last year. And Derek Hanavan, you know, like, he's obviously been around for a couple of years, but, like, that was a clinic he put on. I think Eamon Fitzmaurice used that word in commentary actually yesterday. Like, you know, he is obviously progressing at a rate to, you know, where you'd be talking about him for the next 10 years as one of the top forwards. He was genuinely brilliant yesterday. And I think that he offers something, like, totally different to Tyrone, because he's so good on the ball. He's such a good passer, but he's getting the scores now in a way that he hadn't been for the last kind of, ever since he came on the Tyrone team. I've been waiting for the day where it's like, okay, he's actually going to stick 1-4, 1-5 here and go and win the game himself, and he very nearly did it yesterday. So I'd be confident about, if I was Tyrone, yeah, I would be far from downbeat about it.
Yeah, definitely. Just, I'd say even just their body language coming off the field and stuff like that. Look, I'd say for them, maybe they probably will have their eye on that their group stage, and, you know, there's a lot will probably unfold in the championship. But the way they played yesterday, look, it's a brand of football that's, you know, it's good to watch, and it will come up against, you know, the top teams will find it tough against them. They went man to man all over the field. They didn't really play a sweeper in the first half, and, you know, they have serious athleticism. And, like, with Darragh Canavan, like, there was Thomas McPhillips was taken off just before half time, which was a tough debut for anyone. But I don't think a lot of stuff could have went his way. On, like, Darragh Canavan was almost remarkable in the first half. There was a ball went to him off Pádraig Campsie that he spun and had it over the bar before I think he even realised, you know, he got it into his hands. The goal, he gave the pass, he was gone like a shot. You know, there's very little defending in that, and, you know, he really showed it yesterday, the class he has.
Yeah, and he's two-footed, you know, and you watch so many inter-county teams, like the Mayo-Roscommon game, there was obviously like a big breeze blowing there, but the amount of shots that were turned down just because players were on their bad foot, I mean, it is actually kind of mental that it's not a thing that just it's a basic requirement of, you know, of fours, that when you're 25 yards out, if you're on your bad foot, you should just be swinging those points, you know?
Yeah, definitely, and he has that, and look, his brother's coming very quickly behind him. I know he came on yesterday and he might not have maybe an impact on the game that he might have wanted, but look, I think he's still involved with the under-20s. That'll be wrapped up in a couple of weeks, and, you know, he's going to be fully available for the championship then for them as well. I'm sure they'll be looking to get him into the fold too, along with Dara.
Tyrone did concede 2017 points, Murph, before you get too big on them. I mean, that's a heavy score. Listen, to concede in the championship. There's a looseness there.
It's very true, but I mean, you know, it also points to the fact that they didn't play with a sweeper, that they are actually backing the forwards that they have.
Are you comparing this to Derry, who scored heavily as well, in fairness, at the weekend, but you're continuing saying that Derry don't have the game for Croke Park, basically.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe what Tyrone are showing.
Yeah, and I you know, to be fair, I don't think, you know, anyone's going to be, you know, basing how they think Derry's year is going to go, you know, on a game against Fermanagh, with all due respect, as they say. But I mean, that's just the reality. There are two teams that are, like,
they're a fair distance apart, even though one's going into Division 2 and one's just leaving it. But yeah, I just think there's more about Tyrone. There's, you know, there's just better. Tyrone have better forwards, and you're looking at, there was like 1-6 of their 1-8 of their 1-10, I think, was from play yesterday. Like, you know, that they are the kind of the metrics you should be looking at if you're saying, right, well, there's a lot going right there. Now Tyrone have been open. They have been open, like even through the league, they've conceded a lot of goals, and that may come back to haunt them, but. You know, if you've got forwards, you've got a chance.
Okay, well, before we start bigging Tyrone up too much, they were beaten at the weekend, so I want to finish with Monaghan and where they're at for the year. I mean, if you were in here a few weeks ago in the middle of the league, it'd be a pretty downbeat chat call, and you'd have to say, but they survived last day of the campaign, now they get this win. People must be feeling pretty good about the year ahead.
Yeah, I suppose during the league, look, maybe from the outside, you know, Vinnie Corey came in and you know, probably looked a very tough job for him. Just, I would have felt coming through the league that didn't really have a great pick of players available to them. The, you know, a lot of maybe different injuries and men unavailable. And yesterday, I think I'd said, Demorph, it was the strongest Monaghan squad that was going into a game probably all year. And, you know, they had men back on the pitch. Desi Wardle, hopefully, he'll be back the next day. It'll be another big player to get back for them. And look, I think they're looking forward to, you know, they've found a good few players there throughout the league. Carl Gallagher done well yesterday. Ryan O'Toole as well, back in the fold. You know, I'd say they'll go into that game, and you know, Derry obviously our favourites, won Ulster last year and beat Monaghan, but look, I'd say Monaghan will be looking for really fancy and a crack at that.
Yeah, okay, well hopefully it'll be as exciting as it was at the weekend. Colin, great to have you in again.
Yeah, chat, thanks very much. All right.
Bang to the head.
This was given to me by one of these guys right here. Was a hell of a rugby player, and they beat the hell out of Black and Tan.
Defence of the Realmite.
It's the bang to the head.
How many times have you mick bastards been told, eh?
Followed by another bang to the head.
Anyone wearing orange is not welcome in.
Mr. Biden, a quick word for the BBC.
I've not put my hand in my pocket since I left. They paid me £500.
BBC, I'm Irish.
If any fool wants to pay me £500 to gibber and jabber, I'll take his money.
They don't like him too much over in the, certain sections of the UK
British media
press.
Yeah, they've taken to get him.
Don't know if you've heard that. new audio, a brand new audio bed for you there. Yeah. Debuting today after Biden's one last week.
I'm just glad we've marked it.
We made a rare foray into the snooker world last Friday. You may remember. Exactly.
Bloody great tune.
It is. We'll show you what we can do with a load of balls and snooker. Maybe Ken, Justin McCarthy says, maybe Ken would be more impressed with the snooker if he realised some of the world's greatest athletes are competing. I'm talking about Sean Murphy's claim to be the only sports person to have achieved a 147, a 9-darter, and a hole in one.
Wow.
This is from Justine McCarthy.
Justin McCarthy.
Oh, Justine McCarthy.
Former Watford senior hurling manager?
Probably not. It's from he links to an article. It's from an interview with the From the Clubhouse podcast. And he does say in this article, we did a funny Twitter poll because Wayne Mardle, the former pro darts player, is a good friend of mine. This is Sean Murphy speaking. And he's a commentator on Skynet. We've played golf together and had a bit of banter. And we always have the crack about what's harder. Is it the 9-darter or is it the 147? Now, obviously, it's the 147.
Yeah, I would have thought so. Right?
I would also say that.
Yeah, I would say that.
Well, why would you say? I mean, the 9-darter is not
there's
easy.
There's more just moving more, parts.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are only 9 darts by definition in the 9-darter. You can hit a streak.
It's pretty hard to get a 9-darter.
It is very hard.
We're not demeaning. No. That's the last thing we want to do here today.
But I mean, I can see how I could feasibly do that.
No, I couldn't. I mean, I've actually seen you play darts.
Where did you see him play darts?
We used to have a dartboard in the old.
Of course.
Ken tried it once.
I actually forgot that.
A bit like the table tennis. Ken tried it twice. Was not very good at it.
It's like a monkey's typewriter thing, you know. If I was there, darts, board, nothing else to do, I would eventually do it.
No, that's not true. I mean, the vast majority of people who play darts on a regular basis have never had a 9-darter.
Regular. But I mean, if Ken attacks...
Yeah, but if I was doing it...
If Ken was on a desert island and all he had was a dartboard, 3 darts and a full set of snooker balls, full-size snooker cue, full-size table, he would do the 9-darter before he'd do it.
Oh, no, I still think the 9-darter... I still agree the 9-darter is easier than the 147. I just don't ever see Ken doing either.
Listen, jeez, we give that man... Ask Ken early, dig a hole, he won't stop until he hits Australia. And he'd turn around and he'd feel it back in for you.
Sean Murphy continues.
Never now, shy at work. Now, never shy at work. That
it's the 147. Anyone who says a nine darter needs to go and see a doctor immediately. But we have that bit of banter quite often. The last time we did it, I think the hole in one got thrown in, and it was like, hang on a minute, I've done all three.
The hole in one is the easiest. I mean, that's just like, that was a bit, I mean, basically everyone who's ever played golf.
Again, I'm not sure you would ever get a
Why?
No, you could get a hole in one. You could.
But
get
why
a hole
do you
one.
Think I wouldn't? Of course I'd get a hole in one.
It, again, by definition, it's only one shot, but, you know, depends on how long the hole is. You have to reach the green.
But why couldn't I hit the ball? It's not that difficult. Like, I mean, it's just that
I haven't actually seen you play golf, so I'm not in a position to comment on that. I can comment on your dart.
I just don't think it looks that difficult what they're doing. It doesn't look that difficult.
Didn't Seamus Power get two in a row in the par three competition?
He did.
In Augusta just last week. Mm. He's pretty good at golf.
Yeah.
Seamus Power, that's the one thing I would say. But there you go. Yeah, Sean Murphy, apparently he's done the trifecta.
If any World Service members who have done all three, please don't hesitate to tell us.
If there's a World Service member who's done a 147 break for a start, I want to hear about that. I think that's impressive though, guys. Remarkable news out of yesterday's Great Ireland 10K run in the Phoenix Park. Jake O'Regan from St. John's Athletics Club was the first man home in 26 minutes and 8 seconds, smashing the world record set by Kenya's Ronex Kipruto last year.
Wow.
World record smashed in Phoenix Park. Unfortunately, O'Regan, like the rest of the 2,000 plus competitors, had only raced roughly 8.5 kilometres, it turns
what
out.
Happened? What happened there?
Ian O'Regan can tell you, Ken. Hips forward. O'Riordan himself. Report. That's one from early lockdown. If people have only joined us since then, you've got to go back and read Ian O'Riordan's article.
I spoke to him about the ideal running posture. I thanked him personally for that tip.
I honestly still think of it sometimes. When I'm getting tired, right, I do sometimes still, I'm kind of plodding along and I'm starting to bend over to it. I do sometimes, the words pop into my head, hips forward, pops into my head and I just sort of,
God, what a comical scene that must be.
It just makes you more upright. It's not really hips forward. It's just to get you in it. Anyway, where was I
alignment.
Here? What
it's
happened
alignment.
Here? Athletics Ireland has issued an apology after runners in Sunday's Great Ireland 10 kilometres run were misdirected over the course of the race and ended up finishing some 1.5 kilometres short of the distance. Now, I've run a lot of, especially like 10K, oftentimes you get people finishing, right? And, you know, we've all got our snazzy little watches, our GPSs. And sometimes there's some dispute with the organisers. Like, oh, it says here I've actually done 10.1. Right, you know, what you're saying 10. Well, yes, different GPSs are going to measure it slightly differently. But this is miles outside the margin for error. So I was thinking,
I don't understand how the runner themselves isn't like, this is not.
They did get it. Forget it. My point about this is, this wasn't one of those cases where it was a slightly misjudged or it was measured incorrectly, as has happened in races over the years. In this case, it was measured out at 10K. Unfortunately, the problem was, I'll come back to O'Riordan here, rose around the 3 kilometre mark when the runners were misdirected and with that missed out on another of the smaller 1.5 kilometre laps. Ooh. So they'd obviously done a 1.5, a 1.5, supposed to be doing another, a third one, I guess. Mm. But rather than that, somebody made a mistake, something happened somewhere and they got sent for. As the race progressed from there, it was evident they were running short, but it was clearly too late to turn back. Mm. So they did know, they realised that they were like, something's going on here. But what do? Do you run backwards to try to make it up? It's not going to be an official result.
And tell me, what are they saying in the community? In the running community?
It's just really annoying.
Mm. Ken left the WhatsApp group, didn't he?
The Dublin Runners WhatsApp group.
Runners WhatsApp group.
Runners Ireland.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Rashida Adeleke, I should probably mention, who we had on the pod recently, has broken more records over the weekend, legitimate ones. First Irish woman to break 50 seconds in the 400 metres. This is the thing, when she eventually gets going on the 400, she could break 50 seconds at some point.
Yeah.
She's already done
record
it.
Scratch 2
yeah,
weeks later.
Exactly. And that came less than 24 hours after she had raced the 200 metres and broke her own Irish record there as well, running 22.34 seconds. In both cases, the distances were correctly measured. It's tricky to send people the wrong direction in a 200 metre race, to be fair.
Yeah.
So all above board.
You would probably cop on fairly fast that something was awry.
Yeah.
If you decided to.
It's absolutely stunning what she's doing there. Ridiculous. Thanks, Murph. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Owen. Thank you, Ken.
Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to sign up to the World Service for our Hurling Championship Preview, Champions League chat, and to stop
Caitlin
here.
Thompson on Boris Becker.
Caitlin Thompson. And if you want to not hear any more ads on the pod, that's another reason. Second House Podcast is part of the
Acast Creator Network.
Yeah, that was it.
Which one is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's World Service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.